This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
This actually was perfect because I didn't talk to Vince about this before, but I've been thinking about angiosomes for a long time, and I'm still confused about it. So I apologize in advance because I'm sort of showing you how I'm thinking through this, and I haven't figured it out yet, but I think angiosomes isn't quite right. So This is a slide I like. So Galileo was born in 1564. It's the same year as William Shakespeare, and he was actually excommunicated from the church for suggesting that there were moons around other planets and that the Earth wasn't the center of the universe. And he was only unexcommunicated a few years ago. But this all came about because mirrors were developed. They turned them into telescopes. And so I remember when I went to do endovascular training with Mike Silva in 2004 because I'd done EVARs and I'd done some iliacs and carotid stents were coming out and I wanted to learn how to do that. And when I went there, I did carotid stents, but I started doing really complex leg revascularizations. And at the time, the tools were more primitive, but I thought, geez, I'm not sure how long these are going to last. But for some patients, it's nice to have an option when they don't have a good conduit or they're high risk. And Bob Hobson told me at the time, when you look at things differently, they look different. And I think that's the point I'm trying to get here. So the traditional teaching has long been smokers get aortic occlusive disease and get SFA disease. And then diabetes affects your profunda, affects the popliteal, affects the tibials, and traditionally with relative pedal sparing. And that's how you get 1,000 pedal bypasses from Pompacelli and Legerfo, right? Because for years, when we got high-quality angiograms, I could almost always find a patient who, for example, classic picture, everything's pretty normal to the pop except for some profunda disease. There's tibial wipeout, and there's almost always a good DP or a plantar or a distal posterior tibial or something to bypass too. And you don't need a whole common femoral to foot bypass. You do a pop to pedal with the best piece of vein you got. Easy. So that's what I believe for a long time. It seems to me, I was talking to Mike Conti at a break, and we don't totally agree on this, but I think there's an emerging pattern of disease that's different. So the disease is becoming more distal. And I see patients now that have pretty profound ischemia, and there's not much wrong with their circulation until you get down to the ankle. So there's a group that have just foot disease. And there's another group that has bad tibial disease that I used to do a pedal bypass on. But now when I look at their foot views, the pedal bypass targets aren't that great. So then you're trying to figure out, do I do a bypass to a poor target, or do I try endo first? So I think that's a different pattern of disease than I've seen before. So Graziani has actually a reasonable anatomic classification of tibial disease, which TASC is still lacking and which we're trying to come up with on the Global Guidelines Committee. But the only one I know of, I borrowed from George, but this is just to go over the pedal anatomy, but you all know that. So let me just give you two simple cases. So this patient, I got consulted. The resident shows me the toe waveforms. We're walking in the hallway from my clinic to see the patient. He's got toe gangrene. And the toe waveforms are all flat. And the dorsalis pedis waveform is poor. So I go see the patient, and the fellow hadn't really examined him. And so when you feel at his ankle level, he's got a really good anterior tibial pulse that goes down almost to the foot, and then you can't feel anything. And so when I angioed him, he had one vessel run off, and he's got this high-grade stenosis in his dorsalis pedis artery, which I just ballooned with a 2.5 balloon. It was easy. And his toe waveform went from flat to like 60, and he healed just a minor toe amp. And I don't remember seeing that kind of focal disease. This was a lady that actually leaked out of the Ben Taub system. So she came over there with an ulcer on her toe, got put on antibiotics. The antibiotics actually controlled the infection somewhat, but her toe turned gangrenous, and she actually had insurance. So her mother got frustrated because they weren't doing anything to it. So she comes into clinic, and orthopedics admitted her. This is when I first got to Baylor. And they called me and said, "We're going to take this lady's toe off. You want to do something?" I said, "Stop." So toe gangrene is dry. And so angio her, she's a frail little lady, and she's got this short segment distal anterior tibial dorsalis pedis occlusion. And I got that open pretty easily with just a V14 wire, took her toe off the same admission. So I called ortho afterwards. I said, "Look, I'm going to take this toe off, or do you want to do it?" He goes, "Well, if you don't mind, you can do it." So I just saw her in clinic. She's a year out, and that she has a palpable dorsalis pedis pulse. So that focal disease is pretty easy. This is a lady. So I don't think I've even done a bypass to the popliteal artery yet since I've been in Houston. But this lady had seen several cardiologists and a couple surgeons, and she had normal flow to the knee, perineal-only runoff that was pretty good, and there's a collateral here that kind of fed this plantar vessel that's not the best. I don't think that's a useful DP target. And her toe waveforms were all flat, so I did a bypass to this little plantar vessel. And actually, it lasted a year and a half. It just went down, but her foot's healed. She ended up with a transmet, stayed healed. Now, this is the answer to Mike's question. So you're going to say this is a crappy arteriogram. This is a patient I saw with David. She was a young renal failure patient. And these are selective injections in both the anterior tibial and the posterior tibial, which were patent down to the ankle. And I used vasodilators, and this is all you get in the foot. So I don't remember seeing disease like that 30 years ago. Now, there is one pedal class, there's a couple pedal classification systems, but the one that's most common used is this one from Japan. So I visited Japan a few years ago, and they have a high incidence of pedal disease, and they have a high incidence of renal failure patients. Actually, a lot of their CLI patients are renal failure, and they're not all from diabetes. A lot of them are just from hypertension. So I think that renal failure may predispose you to pedal disease. But these are just the different patterns, sort of based on arch patency. And then this was a paper, I think somebody else showed this slide earlier, but there was a paper from Borselli that looked at patients who got dorsalis pedis bypass and still didn't heal. And they tended to be patients with large heel ulcers. Doesn't mean you shouldn't do it, but it means that you may have a problem. So that all this stuff kind of got me thinking about stuff. So there's a doc that works with Mike Edmonds in the UK who's sort of reinvented distal bypass. He calls it ultradistal bypass, but it's just pedal bypass. But what he did was kind of useful. He basically just, he was trying to look at angiosome versus arch patency. So he had complete pedal arch, incomplete pedal arch, and no pedal arch, and just looked at his patients that way. And actually, his limb salvage and patency rates correlated with whether or not there was a pedal arch. So if that's true, that's kind of useful information. So to follow up on what Vince was saying, when do angiosomes matter and when does pedal disease matter? So I've done tibial bypasses for years into diseased tibial vessels that run off into the foot and kind of ignored some distal disease, and a lot of them do fine. You know, you just look at it, it's not perfect, it's not what you'd like to have, but it's what you got. So rather than sew to a really diseased vessel in the foot, I'll plug into the anterior tibial or something higher up because it's going to be easier to sew and see what I get. So I don't think the angiogram totally correlates with the foot perfusion you're going to get. That's one thing I want to say. And I think the concept we came up with was the best example of this. There's other ones, but the best and most common example is what we call orphan heel. So that's where there's good forefoot perfusion, but there's not good hindfoot perfusion. And there are patients like that. And so Vince is showing you a lot of these. And I think that the problem with the angiosome concept is it was designed for patients that have normal circulation who are going to have a free flap, and you're going to take that tissue and move it or rotate it or something, right? So that entire tissue thing, once you carve it out, is dependent on that. But that's not necessarily how the blood flow is connected in a foot who has in the foot of a patient who has disease, right? Because there's going to be collaterals, and we can't always predict what kind of flow we're going to get by plugging into which collateral. So I'll skip over that stuff. So this was a paper from a group in Belgium that basically looked at where lesions occurred on the foot, and they didn't necessarily correlate with where the angiosome would have predicted the lesion would be. So the point of that is a lot of these foot lesions don't develop from ischemia. They develop from motor neuropathy or sensory neuropathy or pressure or shear. So the development of the ulcer may not be predicted by the angiosome. But also, I think in most patients, although there may be some benefit to wound healing, it's not likely that you have to angiosome revascularize everybody to get good results. So when does it matter? So the concept I'm trying to develop, I think of it as compartmentalization. So what I mean by that is, let's imagine there's an office building, and on the fifth floor is the guy that writes all the paychecks, and he gets sick. Then no paychecks are going to get written, right? But what if there was a guy on the fourth floor who used to write the paychecks and knows how to do all that stuff, and when that guy on the fifth floor goes out, the guy on the fourth floor takes over? Well, we can't always predict the connections in the foot, right? So there are instances where there just is no connection between one part of the foot and the other. So I think there are definitely patients who have regional ischemia of the foot. So I'll show you the best example of this. This is a guy I took care of for almost 20 years till he finally died of liver and renal failure. And when I first met him, he worked for our healthcare group. He was an accountant in the University Physicians Group. And he had started off with simple neuropathic ulcer, got infected, got a toe amp. And over the years, I did multiple toe amps on him because he had recurrent disease. I followed him for 17 years. And when I met him the last 6 months of his life again, he came in with this big heel wound sent from dialysis. And he had a palpable dorsalis pedis pulse. And everything I'd done on his forefoot for his entire 17 years I'd known the guy had healed. He still had a DP pulse. But look at this heel wound. And then you angiogram the guy. I left the DP's open, the arch is incomplete, and his perineal's gone. The posterior tibial's occluded here at the ankle, and I actually got that open again and revascularized it endovascularly. So that patient had an ischemic heel, even though you couldn't measure a toe pressure on him anymore, right, because his toes are all gone. But he has a DP pulse. He has a normal DP waveform. So he would be an ischemia zero, technically, by the Wi-Fi system, except if you read the Wi-Fi paper, it actually acknowledges that there probably are patients that have regional foot perfusion abnormalities, but we don't quite know how to measure them yet. So that's another thing. If you get a patient that looks like their wound might be ischemic, think about the compartments of the foot and think about whether or not they might matter. So this just shows you how malperfused his heel was before the intervention. So there's a major unmet need is how do you recognize this when it occurs? Because you will miss them. If it's not a, so the traditional things we have with toe waveform and even ABI kind of predict forefoot perfusion. They don't necessarily predict hindfoot perfusion. Then there's some patients that have lateral foot ischemia from the lateral plantar artery, and you won't pick them up on forefoot perfusion. So one message is when you see a renal failure patient, especially with this giant heel wound, is think about ischemia, even if their forefoot perfusion is normal. So we've been trying desperately to get this published, and we got told we didn't have enough patients, but I think it's the largest series in the world, because Falia's group just actually reported a case of this. But we had 41 patients with deep heel wounds, almost all of whom were diabetic, and many of whom were in renal failure. And we looked at that. My original concept was to try to look, this came about because one of our fellows had seen a patient at David's, and the vascular lab test was normal, so the DP waveform was triphasic, patient had normal toe pressures, and he told the podiatry fellow, you guys go ahead and debride the foot, it's fine. So it debrides the foot and the whole heel, I took this slide out, but the whole heel just fell apart. And you go back and look at the waveforms, and the posterior tibial waveform was really blunted. So when I angiogrammed him, he had perineal and posterior tibial disease. So this is another patient, similar story here. Flat waveform down here. He's got actually abnormal that way. Let me skip over that. This is a patient with a heel ulcer, and she's actually got a good anterior tibial vessel, but no posterior tibial. So we got the posterior tibial open here, and then her foot perfusion improved. So this, I'm still trying to work out how to quantify this, but basically you look at the T1 half to maximal perfusion or intensity on the indocyanine in green, and you get a reflection of ischemia. So this is another case I learned a lot. This shows you that you can't correlate the angiogram directly with how much flow improvement you're going to get. So this guy, diabetic, already had lost his other leg, had a palpable dorsalis pedis pulse, and this wound hadn't healed in 15 months. He'd also been offloaded with a total contact cast. So he had already lost his other leg, but this guy was fully functional. He's walking around on the foot, which is partly why he's got this sore. And so I angiogram, I'm thinking I want to get his posterior tibial artery open. So this is his curve of perfusion before, and it's kind of a gentle slope. So if you see a lot of these, for wounds that are going to heal, the slope is pretty steep. That means the perfusion gets there pretty quickly. So he's got a normal anterior tibial. He's got a little stenosis here in this really long TP trunk, another stenosis here in what's the perineal. And you see this stump of posterior tibial. So what you don't see very well is not any distal posterior tibial target. So I tried for an hour to get through that posterior tibial. I never could do it. So I just dilated the TP trunk and the perineal stenosis. And if you kind of imagine looking here now at the heel, you see more collaterals than you did before. So skeptical as I am, if someone showed me that at a conference, I'd have said that's total BS. Well, look at his SPI perfusion. So this is before the TP trunk and perineal angioplasty. This is afterwards. Marked difference in perfusion. And he healed in 6 weeks. So my point of that slide, it's an anecdote, but I think we need better ways to measure perfusion, and we need better ways to measure regional perfusion in the foot, something besides toe pressures. So my concept is this, and there's other instances, but the best example is the heel. So it's possible because of arch disease or distal foot disease, which we see more of, that the foot's become disconnected. So just because one part of it's vascularized doesn't mean the whole foot is. So let me skip over that. Now, this is just to show you there's no free shot. So this is a sad story. This is one of my first referrals from a cardiologist in Houston. This guy has a renal transplant that's been working for 15 years. He, as near as I could figure, he had minor toe gangrene. He had a femoral pulse. He had a popliteal pulse. Don't know what his toe pressures were, but I'll grant he was probably ischemic. So because he had a transplanted kidney, they went up and over. They went from the other side, did a CO2 angiogram of his aorta and iliacs, which was normal. So from the CO2 angiogram, I'm pretty sure they showered plaque, and his transplant kidney lost its function. So he got transferred to our hospital in renal failure. He had a creatinine of like 1.6 for 10 years, and all of a sudden it was shot, and he went on dialysis. And then this was his foot. So these things, if you biopsy, and these are all atheromboli. So I looked at these arteriograms of the cine runs, and they never really had a foot film to start with. So what I would have done with that patient is I would have punctured him antegrade, stuck my catheter down at the knee, and seen if I had a good distal target vessel. And if I had a good distal target vessel, I would have bypassed him. But he got prolonged attempts at atherectomy and angioplasty. They tried to stent the posterior tibial, and he gets transferred with this. So he ended up with a BK. The only good part about that is I now get patients referred directly from that group that I never used to get at all before. So to apologize a little bit for this. So I think there is a change in disease patterns. I'm seeing much more distal disease, and I don't think it's just because we're paying attention to it, because when I worked with Dr. Porter, that was Daughter's group, and Joe Rush was there, and we got really good high-quality foot films. We always got a really good lateral foot. And so I think if I had seen this disease pattern, then I would have recognized it, and I've always paid attention to foot films. So before I started doing my own angiograms, I'd always meet with the radiologist and say, look, you've really got to show us the foot, because that's where the money is for patients with diabetes. And I don't remember seeing as many patients as I do now where there's a lot of disease in the foot. So that the two things are, one, look for that, and two, we still don't know how best to treat it. And three, we don't know how best to figure out what part of the foot's malperfused and then how to predict the outcome of a revascularization. So I just showed you one example of an indirect revascularization that actually worked quite well when you measured it by a regional blood flow technique. But I'm not sure they all work out like that. I've done plenty of perineal operations that don't work, not bypass, but angioplasties, which weren't enough to heal the foot. So it's not totally predictable by the angiogram. So thank you very much for your time.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.